Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour Christ Our Disciples Church Congregation, now inside the 12th hour Liberty Grove, Texas. Today is September 23, 2017, our church before 2021. We will start our second service on the Sabbath day of the psalm entitled, Just a Closer Walk with Thee. And we lift our song. Yes, will keep me from all wrong. Oh, be satisfied as long as I walk, let me walk close to Thee. Just a closer walk with Thee. And if Yeshua is my plea, daily walking close to Thee, let it be, here we are, let it be. Through this world of toil and snare, if my falter Yahweh cares, who with me my burden share, let it be, here we are, let it be. Just a closer walk with Thee. When it Yahweh is my plea, daily walking close to Thee, let it be, here we are, let it be. When my feeble life is old, far from me to be alone, guide me gently, set me home to the King and shore to the shore. Just a closer walk with Thee. Christ Yahshua is my plea. Let me walk in close to Thee. Let it be, Thee all, let it be.
Part 5, Atonement. There's in Patriarchs and Prophets, we're on page 74. But instead of acknowledging his sin, Cain continued to complain of the injustice of Yahweh and to cherish jealousy and hatred of Abel. He angrily reproached his brother and attempted to draw him into the controversy concerning Yahweh's dealings with them. In the meekness, yet fearlessly and firmly, Abel defended the justice and goodness of Yahweh. He pointed out Cain's error and tried to convince him that the wrong was in himself. He pointed to the compassion of Yahweh and the sparing the life of their parents, when he might have punished them with the instant death, and urged that Yahweh loved them, or he would not have given his son, innocent and holy, to suffer the penalty that they had incurred. All this caused Cain anger to burn the hotter. Reason and conscience told him that Abel was in the right, but he was enraged that one who had been wont to heed his counsel should now presume to disagree with him, and that he should gain no sympathy in his rebellion. In the fury of his passion, he slew his brother. Cain hated and killed his brother, not for any wrong that Abel had done, but because his own works were evil and his brothers are righteous. So in all ages the wicked have hated those who were better than themselves. Abel's life of the obedience and unswerving faith was to chain a perpetual reproof. Everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. The bride of the heavenly light that is reflected from the character of Yahweh's faithful servant, the more clearly the sins of the unrighteous are revealed, and the more determined will be their efforts to destroy those who disturb their peace. For the murder of the Abel was the first example of the enmity that Yahweh had declared would exist between the serpent and the seed of the woman, between Satan and his subjects and Yahshua and his followers. Through the man's sin, Satan had gained control of the human race, but the Yahshua would enable them to cast off his yoke whenever through faith in the Lamb of Elohim a soul renounces the service of sin. Satan's wrath is kindled. The holy life of Abel testified against Satan's claim that it is impossible for man to keep Yahweh's law. When Cain, moved by the spirit of the wicked one, saw that he could not control Abel, he was so enraged that he destroyed his life. And wherever there are any who will stand in the vindication of the righteousness of the law of Yahweh, the same spirit will be manifested against them. It is the spirit that through all the ages he has set up the stake and kindled the burning power for the disciples of Yahshua, for the disciples of the Yahshua. But the cruelties heaped upon the follower of the Yahshua are instigated by the Satan and his host because they cannot force him to submit unto their control. It is the rage of a vanquished foe. Every martyr of the Yahshua has died a conqueror. Says the prophet, they overcame him, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Cain the murderer was soon called to answer for his crime. Yahweh said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not, am I my brother's keeper? Cain had gone so far in sin that he had lost his sense of the continual presence of Yahweh and of his greatness and omniscience. So he resorted to falsehood to conceal his guilt. Again Yahweh said unto Cain, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. Yahweh had given Cain an opportunity to confess his sin. He had had time to reflect. He knew the enormity of the deed he had done, and of the falsehood he had uttered to conceal it. But he was rebellious still, and his sentence was no longer deferred. The divine voice that had been heard in the entreaty and admonition pronounced a terrible wrong word, and now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. And thou tellest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. Notwithstanding that Cain had by his crimes merited the sentence of death, a merciful Creator still spared his life and granted him opportunity for repentance. But Cain lived only to harden his heart, to encourage rebellion against the divine authority, and to become the head of a line of bold, abandoned sinners. This one apostate led on by the Satan became a tempter to others, and his example and influence exerted their demoralizing power until the earth became so corrupt and filled with violence as to call for its destruction. In the sparing of the life of the first murderer, Yahweh presented before the whole universe a lesson bearing upon the whole controversy. The dark history of the Cain and his descendants was an illustration of what would have been the result of permitting the sinner to live on forever to carry out his rebellion against Yahweh. The forbearance of Yahweh only rendered the wicked more bold and defiant in their iniquity. 15 centuries after the sentence pronounced upon Cain, the universe witnessed the fruition of his influence and example, and the crime and pollution that flooded the earth. It was made manifest that the sentence of death pronounced upon the fallen race for the transgression of Yahweh's law was both just and merciful. The longer men lived in sin, the more abandoned they became. The divine sentence, cutting short a career of the unbridled iniquity and freeing the world from the influence of those who had become hardened in the rebellion, was a blessing rather than a curse. Satan is constantly at work with intense energy and under a thousand disguises to misrepresent the character and government of Yahweh. With extensive, well-organized plans and marvelous power, he is working to hold the inhabitants of the world under his deception. Yahweh, the one infinite and all-wise, sees the end from the beginning, and in dealing with the evil, his plans were far-reaching and comprehensive. It was his purpose not merely to put down the rebellion, but to demonstrate unto all the universe the nature of the rebellion. Yahweh's plan was unfolding, showing both his justice and his mercy, and fully vindicating his wisdom and righteousness in his dealings with the evil. The holy inhabitants of the other worlds were watching with the deepest interest the events taking place on the earth. In the condition of the world that existed before the flood, they saw illustrated the results of the administration which Lucifer had endeavored to establish in heaven, and rejecting the authority of Yahshua and casting aside the law of Yahweh, and those high-handed sinners of the antediluvian world, they saw the subject over whom Satan held sway. The thoughts of men's hearts were only evil continually. Every emotion, every impulse and imagination was at war with the divine principles of the purity and peace and love. It was an example of the awful depravity resulting from the Satan's policy to remove from the Yahweh's creatures the restraint of his holy law. By the facts unfolded and the progress of the great controversy, Yahweh will demonstrate the principles of his rules of government, which have been falsified by the Satan and by all whom he has deceived. His justice will finally be acknowledged by the whole world, though the acknowledgement will be made too late to save the rebellious. Yahweh carries with him the sympathy and approval of the whole universe, as step by step his great plan advances to its complete fulfillment. He will carry it with him in the final eradication of the rebellion. It will be seen that all who have forsaken the divine precept have placed themselves on the side of Satan in the warfare against Yahshua. When the prince of this world shall be judged, and all who have united with him shall share his fate, the whole universe as a witnesses to the sentence will declare, "Just and true are thy ways, O thou King of Saints." Okay, that ends chapter 5. Chapter 6, Seth and Enoch, Patriarchs and Prophets. And this one I'm using, I'm on page 77 because I have a lot of pictures in here. This book is not numbered like the others. Okay, it says, "And Adam was given another son to be the inheritor of the divine promise, the heir of the spiritual birthright. The name Seth, given unto his son, signified appointed or compensation. For said the mother, Yahweh hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew." Seth was of more noble stature than Cain or Abel, and resembled Adam more closely than did his other son. He was a worthy character, following in the steps of Abel, yet he inherited no more natural goodness than did Cain. Concerning the creation of Adam, it is said, "In the likeness of Yahweh made he him." that man after the fall begat his son in his own likeness after his image. For Adam was created sinless in the likeness of Yahweh. Seth, like Cain, inherited the fallen nature of his parent, but he received also the knowledge of the Redeemer and instruction in righteousness. By the divine grace, he served and honored Yahweh, and he labored, as Abel would have done, had he lived to turn the minds of the sinful men to reverence and obey their Creator. Unto Seth, unto him also, there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of Yahweh. For the faithful had worshipped Yahweh before, but as men increased, the distinction between the two classes became more marked. There was an open profession of loyalty to Yahweh on the part of one, as there were the contempt and disobedience on the part of the other. Before the fall, our first parents had kept the Sabbath, which was instituted in Eden, and after expulsion from paradise, they continued its observance. They had tasted the bitter fruits of the disobedience, and had learned what everyone who tramples upon Yahweh's commandments will sooner or later learn, that the divine precepts are sacred and immutable, and that the penalty of the transgression will be, surely be inflicted. For the Sabbath was honored by all the children of the Adam that remained loyal to Yahweh. But Cain and his descendants did not respect the day upon which Elohim had rested. They chose their own time for labor and for rest, regardless of Yahweh's express command. Upon receiving the curse of Yahweh, Cain had withdrawn from his father's household. He had first chosen his occupation as a tiller of the soil, and he now founded a city, calling it after the name of his eldest son. He had gone out from the presence of Yahweh, cast away the promise of the destroyed Eden, to seek his possession and enjoyment in the earth. Under the curse of sin, thus standing at the head of that great class of men who worship the Yahweh of this world, or the God of this world. In that which pertains to mere earthly and material progress, his descendants became distinguished, that they were regardless of Yahweh and in opposition unto his purposes for man to the crime of murder in which Cain had led the way. Lamech the fifth in descent added polygamy and boastfully defined. He acknowledged Yahweh only to draw from the avenging of Cain an assurance of his own safety. Abel had led a pastoral life, dwelling in tents or booths, and the descendants of Seth followed the same course, counting themselves strangers and pilgrims on the earth, seeking a better country, that is, a heavenly. For some time, the two classes remained separate, the race of the Cain spreading from the place of their first settlement, dispersed over the plains and valleys where the children of Seth had dwelt, and the latter, in order to escape from their contaminated influence, withdrew to the mountain and there made their home. So long as this separation continued, they maintained the worship of Yahweh and his purity. But in the lapse of time, they ventured little by little to mingle with the inhabitants of the valley. The association was productive of their worst results. The sons of Yahweh saw the daughters of men that they were fair. The children of Seth, attracted by the beauty of the daughters of Cain, displeased Yahweh by the intermarrying with them. Many of the worshippers of Yahweh were beguiled into the sin by the allurement. They were now constantly before them, and they lost their peculiar holy character. Mingling with the depraved, they became like them in the spirit and in deeds. For the restrictions of the seventh commandment were disregarded, and they took them wise of all which they chose. For the children of Seth went in the way of Cain, they fixed their minds upon their worldly prosperity and enjoyment, and neglected the commandments of Yahweh. Men did not like to retain Yahweh in their knowledge. They became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Therefore Yahweh gave them over to a mind void of judgment. Sin spread abroad in the earth like a deadly leprosy. For nearly 1,000 years Adam lived among men, a witness to the results of sin. Faithfully he sought to stem the tide of evil. He had been commanded to instruct his posterity in the way of the Yahweh, and he carefully treasured what Yahweh had revealed unto him, and repeated unto succeeding generations, unto his children and children's children, to the ninth generation. He described man holy and happy estate in paradise, and repeated the history of his fall, telling them of the sufferings by which Elohim had taught him the necessity of the strict adherence to his law, and explaining to them the merciful provision for their salvation. Yet there were but few who gave heed to his words. Often he was met with the bitter reproaches for the sin that had brought such woe upon his posterity. Adam's life was one of sorrow, humility, and contrition. When he left Eden, the thought that he must die thrilled him with horror. He was first made acquainted with the reality of death in the human family when Cain, his firstborn son, became the murderer of his brother. Filled with the keenest remorse for his own sin, and doubly bereaved in the death of Abel and the rejection of Cain, Adam was bowed down with anguish. He witnessed a widespread corruption that was finally the cause of the destruction of the world by a flood. And though the sentence of death pronounced upon him by his Maker had at first appeared terrible, yet after beholding it for nearly 1,000 years the results of sin, he felt that it was merciful in Yahweh to bring to an end a life of the suffering and sorrow. Notwithstanding the wickedness of the antediluvian world, that age was not, as has often been supposed, an era of ignorance and barbarism. The people were granted the opportunity of reaching a high standard of the moral and intellectual attainment. They possessed great physical and mental strength, and their advantages for acquiring both religious and scientific knowledge were unrivaled. It is a mistake to suppose that because they lived until a great age, their minds matured late. Their mental powers were early developed, and those who cherished the fear of Yahweh and lived in harmony with His will continued to increase in knowledge and wisdom throughout their life. Could the illustrious scholars of our time be placed in the contrast with men of the same age who lived before the flood, they would appear as greatly inferior in the mental and as in the physical strength as the years of the man have decreased, and his physical strength has diminished, so his mental capacities have lessened. There are men who now apply themselves to study during a period of some 20 to 50 years, and the world is filled with the admiration of their attainment. But how limited are these requirements in comparison with those of men whose mental and physical powers were developing for the century? It is true that the people of the modern times have the benefit of the attainments of their predecessors. The men of the masterly mind who planned and studied and wrote have left their work for those who follow. But even in this respect, and so far as merely human knowledge is concerned, how much greater the advantages of the men of that olden time. They had among them for hundreds of years him who was formed in the Yahweh's image, whom their Creator himself pronounced good. the man whom Yahweh had instructed in all the wisdom pertaining to the material world Adam had learned from the Creator, the history of the creation. He himself witnessed the events of the 9 centuries, and he imparted his knowledge to his descendants. For the Antediluvians were without books. They had no written records, but with their great physical and mental vigor, they had strong memories, able to grasp and to retain that which was communicated unto them, and in the turn to transmit it unimpaired unto their posterity. And for hundreds of years there were 7 generations living upon the earth contemporaneously, having the opportunity of consulting together and profiting each by the knowledge and experience of all. For the advantages enjoyed by the men of that age to gain a knowledge that the Elohim through his works have never been equal since and so far from being an era of religious darkness, that was an age of great light. All the world had opportunity to receive instruction from Adam and those who feared Yahweh, and also Yahshua and angels for their teachers. They had a solemn witness to the truth in the garden of Yahweh, which for so many centuries remained among men. At the cherubim guarded gate of the paradise, the glory of Yahweh was revealed, and hither came the first worshipers. Here their altars were reared, and the offerings presented. It was here that Cain and Abel had brought their sacrifice, and Yahweh had condescended to communicate with them. Skepticism could not deny the existence of Eden while it stood just in sight. This entrance barred the watching by the watching angels, for the order of the creation, the object of the garden, the history of its 2 trees, so closely connected with a man's destiny, were undisputed fact, and the evidence of the supreme authority of Yahweh, the obligation of his law, were trees which men were slow to question while Adam was among them. Let's do that last sentence over. And the existence and supreme authority of Yahweh, by the obligation of his law, were with the truths which men were slow to question while the Adam was among them. Notwithstanding the prevailing iniquity, there was a line of the holy men who, elevated and ennobled by the communion with Yahweh, lived as in the companionship of heaven. They were men of the massive intellect of the wonderful attainments. They had a great and holy mission to develop a character of the righteousness, to teach a lesson of the righteousness not only to the men of their time, but for the future generation. Only a few of the most prominent are mentioned in the scripture, but all through the ages, Yahweh had faithful witnesses, true-hearted worshipers. Of Enoch it is written that he lived 65 years and begat a son. After that he walked with Yahweh 300 years. During these early years, Enoch had loved and feared Yahweh and kept his commandments. He was one of the holy lines, the preservers of the truth, faith, the progenitors of the promised seed. From the lips of Adam he had learned the dark story of the fall and the cheering one of the Yahweh's grace as seen in the promise, and he relied upon the Redeemer to come, and that was Yahshua, the Son. But after the birth of his first son, Enoch reached a higher experience. He was drawn to a closer relationship with Yahweh, for he realized more fully his own obligations and responsibility as a son of Yahweh. And as he saw the child's love for his father, his simple trust in his protection, So he felt the deep yearning tendencies of his own heart for that firstborn son. He learned a precious lesson of the wonderful love of Yahweh unto men and the gift of his son, and the confidence which the children of Yahweh may repose in their heavenly Father, the infinite, unfathomable love of the Yahweh to Yahshua became the subject of his meditation day and night, and with all the fervor of his soul he sought to reveal that love to the people among whom he dwelt. Enoch's walk with Yahweh was not in a trance or a vision, but in all the duties of his daily life. He did not become a hermit, shutting himself entirely from the world, for he had a work to do for the Yahweh and the world, in the family and in his intercourse with men. As a husband and father, a friend, a citizen, he was a steadfast, unwavering servant of the Yahweh. His heart was in harmony with Yahweh's will, for can two walk together except they be agreed? And this holy walk was continued for 300 years. There are few Christians who would not be far more earnest and devoted if they knew that they had but a short time to live, or that the coming of Yahshua was about to take place. But in his faith waxed stronger. His love became more ardent with the lapse of the century. Enoch was a man of a strong and highly cultivated mind and extensive knowledge. He was honored with a special revelation from the Yahweh, yet being in constant communion with heaven, with a sense of the divine greatness and perfection ever before him, he was one of the humblest of men. For the closer the connect with Yahweh, the deeper was the sense of his own weakness and imperfection. Distressed by the increasing wickedness of the unrighteous, and fearing that their infidelity might lessen his reverence for Yahweh, Enoch avoided constant association with them, and spent much time in a solitude, giving himself unto the meditation and prayer. Thus he waited before the Yahweh, seeking a clearer knowledge of his will, that he might perform it. To him prayer was as the breath of the soul. He lived in the very atmosphere of heaven. Through holy angels, Yahweh revealed unto Enoch his purpose, to destroy the world by a flood. And he also opened more fully unto him the plan of the redemption. By the spirit of the prophecy, he carried him down through the generation that should live after the flood, and showed him the great events connected with the second coming of Yahshua and the end of the world. Enoch had been troubled in regard to the dead. It had seemed to him that the righteous and the wicked would go to the dust together, and that this would be their end. He could not see the life of the just beyond the grave. In the prophetic vision, he was instructed concerning the death of Yahshua, and was shown his coming in the glory, attended by all the holy angels to ransom his people from the grave. He also saw the corrupt state of the world, when Yahshua should appear the second time, that there would be a boastful, presumptuous, self-willed generation denying the only Yahweh, the Yahshua Messiah, trampling upon the law and despising the atonement. Is that word atonement that we're after? He saw the righteous crowned with the glory and honor, and the wicked banished from the presence of the Yahweh and destroyed by the fire. Enoch became a preacher of the righteousness, making known unto the people that Yahweh had revealed what Yahweh had revealed unto him. Those who feared the Yahweh sought out this holy man to share his instruction and his prayers. He labored publicly also, bearing Elohim's message to all who would hear the words of the warning. His labors were not restricted to the Shiites, in the land where Cain had sought to flee from the divine presence, the prophet of Yahweh made known the wonderful thing that had passed before his vision. Behold, he declared, Yahweh cometh with the 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are unrighteous among them of all their unrighteous deeds. He was a fearless reprover of sin, while he preached the love of Yahweh and the Yahshua unto the people of his time, and pleaded with them to forsake their evil ways. He rebuked the prevailing iniquities and warned the men of his generation that judgment would surely be visited upon the transgressor. It was the spirit of Yahshua that spoke through Enoch. That spirit is manifested not alone in the utterances of the love, compassion, and entreaty. It is not smooth things only that are spoken by holy men. Yahweh puts into the heart and lips of his messengers truth to utter that are keen and cutting as a two-edged sword. For the power of the Yahweh that wrought with his servants was felt by those who heard. Some gave heed unto the warning and renounced their sins, but the multitudes mocked at the solemn message and went on more boldly in their evil ways. For the servants of Yahweh are to bear a singular message unto the world in the last days. And it will also be received with unbelief and mockery. The antediluvian world rejected the warning words of him who walked with Yahweh. So will the last generation make light of the warnings of Yahweh's messengers. In the midst of a life of active labor, Enoch steadfastly maintained his communion with Yahweh. The greater and more pressing his labors, the more constant and earnest were his prayers. He continued to exclude himself at certain periods from all society. After remaining for a time among the people, laboring to benefit them by the instruction and example, he would withdraw to spend a season in the solitude, hungering and thirsting for that divine knowledge that the Yahweh alone can impart. Communing thus with the Yahweh, Enoch came more and more to reflect the divine image. His face was radiant with a holy light, even the light that shineth in the face of the Yahshua. As he came forth from these divine communings, even the unrighteous beheld with awe the impress of the heaven upon his countenance. The wickedness of men had reached such a height that destruction was pronounced against them. As year after year passed on, deeper and deeper grew the tide of the human guilt. Darker and darker gathered the clouds of the divine judgment. Yet Enoch, as a witness of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant, held on to his warning, pleading, entreating, striving for the turning back of the tide of the guilt and for the standing of the bolts of the vengeance. Though his warnings were disregarded by a sinful, pleasure-loving people, he had the testimony that Yahweh approved, and he continued to battle faithfully against the prevailing evil until Yahweh removed him from a world of sin and to the pure joys of heaven. For the men of that generation had mocked the folly of him who sought not to gather gold or silver or to build up possessions here, but Enoch's heart was upon the eternal treasure. He had looked upon the celestial city. He had seen the King in his glory in the midst of the Zion. In other words, he saw the Yahshua, the Son. His mind, his heart, his conversation were in heaven. The greater the existing iniquity, the more earnest was his longing for the home of Yahweh. While still on earth, he dwelt by the faith in the realms of life. Blessed are the pure in the heart, for they shall see Yahweh. For 300 years, Enoch had been seeking purity of the soul. that he might be in the harmony with heaven. For 3 centuries he had walked with Yahweh. Day by day he had longed for a closer union. Nearer and nearer had grown the communion until Yahweh took him to himself. He had stood at the threshold of the eternal world. Only a step between him and the land of the blessed, and now the portals open. The walk with Yahweh, so long pursued on earth, continued, and he passed through the gates of the holy city, the first from among men to enter there. His loss was felt on the earth, for the voice that had been heard day after day and warning and instruction was missed. There were some of both the righteous and the wicked who had witnessed his departure, and hoping that he might have been conveyed to some one of his places of retirement, those who loved him made diligent search, as afterwards the sons of the prophets searched for Elijah, but without avail. They reported that he was not, for Yahweh had taken him. By the translation of the Enoch, Yahweh designed to teach an important lesson. There was danger that men would yield to discouragement because of the fearful results of the Adam sin. Many were ready to exclaim, "What profit is it that we have feared the Yahweh and have kept his ordinances, since the heavy curse is resting upon the race and death is a portion of us all?" But the instructions which Yahweh gave to Adam, and which were repeated by the Seth and exemplified by the Enoch, swept away the gloom and darkness and gave hope unto man. That as through the Adam came death, so through the promised Redeemer would come life and immortality. For the Satan was urging upon men the belief that there was no reward for the righteous or punishment for the wicked, and that it was impossible for men to obey the divine statute. But in the case of the Enoch, Yahweh declared that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He shows what he will do for those who keep his commandments. For the men were taught that it is possible for the obeying of the law of Yahweh, that even while living in the midst of the sinful and corrupt, they were able by the grace of Yahweh to resist temptation and become pure and holy. They saw in his example the blessedness of such a life, and his translation was an evidence of the truth of his prophecy concerning the hereafter, with its reward of joy and glory and immortal life to the obedient, and of condemnation, woe, and death to the transgression. By faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death, for before his translation he had this testimony, that he pleased Yahweh. In the midst of the world by its iniquity doomed to destruction, Enoch lived a life of such close communion with Yahweh that he was not permitted to fall under the power of the dead. The righteous character of this prophet represents the state of the holiness which must be attained by those who shall be redeemed from the earth. At the time of Yahshua's second advent, then as in the world before the flood, iniquity will prevail. Following the promptings of their corrupt hearts and the teaching of a deceptive philosophy, men will rebel against the authority of heaven. But like Enoch, Yahweh people will seek for the purity of the heart and conformity to his will, until they shall reflect the likeness of Yahshua. Like Enoch, they will warn the world of the Yahshua's second coming and of the judgments to be visited upon the transgression, and by their holy conversation and example they will condemn the sins of the unrighteous and the unrighteous. As the Enoch was translated to heaven before the destruction of the world by the water, so the living righteous will be translated from the earth before its destruction by the fire, says the apostle. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, and the twinkling of an eye at the last trump. But Yah himself shall descend from the heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of Yahweh. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For the dead in Yahshua shall rise first, and we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the cloud to meet the Yahshua in the air, and so shall we be with the Yahshua. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. It says, but I'll do a little review here on this page. As Enoch was translated to heaven before the destruction of the world by the water, so the living righteous will be translated from the earth. This is now earth and prophecy is the United States. Now watch this. Before its destruction by the fire, there's going to be a restoration of this earth. There's going to be a destruction of this earth. And we're going to have that type here before we're translated into the kingdom of his dear son and the land of Israel during this 12th parabolic hour. And then that's the type. For at the end of the millennium, you have a 100-year period for the wicked to be resurrected and to live for 100 years. And then all the righteous are going to be in the holy city, because that's where they were translated in the type before the destruction by fire. Because that type, destruction by fire, is found in Revelation 19:20. And he says those that the beast and the false prophet and those that they had deceived and taken the mark of the beast shall be cast to the lake of fire. So that's the type, this side of the millennium. This is the type of the end time. But the righteous are going to be translated into the kingdom of his dear son. And that's going to be translated from the earth, the United States, and taken over to the land of Israel. Now the Pentecostals, they're looking for the rapture. Not only the Pentecostals, but all the other evangelical preachers, ministers, and their congregation. That's all they're taught. They don't know nothing about what the scriptures say, because the scripture says the dead in Yahshua shall rise first. There's got to be a resurrection of the dead first. And we which are alive remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Yahweh in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Yahweh. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. I don't know where they think they're going to go when they are raptured. They're going to rush straight to heaven. But what about all these here dead? That's got to be resurrected first and caught up in the cloud, and then the righteous joins them. Nothing's ever said about this, because they don't have a clue what's in that Bible. They only have one thing taught to them. Somebody told them that, some preacher or some told them that there's going to be a secret rapture one day. We know where that doctrine came from. It came from the Catholic Church. Okay, let's go now to the flood. We're on chapter, it would have to be chapter
7.
A scene of revelry before the flood, as it was in the days of the Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. Luke 17:26. The flood in the days of the Noah, a double curse was resting upon the earth in the consequence of Adam's transgression and of the murder committed by Cain. So those two acts put a double curse upon the earth. Yet this had not greatly changed the face of the nature. There were evidence tokens of decay, but the earth was still rich and beautiful in the gifts of Yahweh's providence. The hills were crowned with the majesty, trees supporting the fruit-laden branches of the vine. The vast garden-like plains were clothed with the verdure and sweet with the fragrance of a thousand flowers. The fruits of the earth were in great variety and almost without limit. The trees far surpassed in size, beauty, and perfection, proportion. Any now to be found. Their wood was of the fine grain and hard substance, closely resembling stone and hardly less enduring. gold, silver, and precious stones existed in the abundance. For the human race yet retained much of its early vigor, but a few generations had passed since Adam had access to the tree, which was to prolong life, and man's existence was still measured by the centuries. Had that long-lived people with their rare powers to plan and execute the devoted themselves unto the service of Yahweh, they would have made their Creator's name a praise in the earth, and would have answered the purpose for which He gave them life. But they failed to do this. There were many giants, men of a great stature and strength, renowned for wisdom, skillful in the devising the most cunning and wonderful work, but their guilt and giving loose rein to iniquity was in proportion to their skill and mental ability. Yahweh bestowed upon these antediluvians many and rich gifts, but they used His bounties to glorify themselves and return them into the curse by the fixing their affections upon the gifts instead of the giver. They employed the gold and silver, the precious stones, and the choice wood in the construction of the habitation for themselves, and endeavored to excel one another in the beautifying of their dwellings with the most skillful workmanship. They sought only to gratify the desires of their own proud heart, and reveled in the sins and pleasure and wickedness. Not desiring to retain Yahweh in their knowledge, they soon came to deny His existence. They adored nature in the place of the Yahweh of nature. They glorified human genius, worshipped the works of their own hands, and taught their children to bow down unto the graven images. In the green fields and under the shadow of the goodly trees, they set up the altars of their idols. Extensive groves that retained their foliage throughout the year were dedicated to the worship of the false gods. With these groves were connected beautiful gardens, their long winding avenues overhung with the fruit-bearing trees of all descriptions, adorned with the statuary and furnished with all that could delight the senses or minister to the voluptuous desires of the people, and this allure them to participate in the idolatrous worship. Men put Yahweh out of their knowledge and worship the creatures of their own imagination. And as a result, they became more and more debased. The psalmist describes the effect produced upon the worshiper by the adoration of the idols. He says, "They that make them are like unto them, so is every one that trusteth in them." It is a law of the human mind that by beholding we become changed. Man will rise no higher than his conceptions of the truth, purity, and holiness. If the mind is never exalted above the level of the humanity, if it is not uplifted by the faith to contemplate infinite wisdom and love, the man will be constantly sinking lower and lower. The worshippers of the false gods clothe their deity with the human attributes and passions, and thus their standard of the character was degraded to the likeness of the sinful humanity. They were defiled, and the consequence, Yahweh saw that the wickedness of the man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart were only evil continually. The earth also was corrupt before Yahweh, and the earth is filled with the violence. Yahweh had given men His commandments as the root of life, but His law was transgressed, and every conceivable sin was the result. For the wickedness of men was open and daring injustice, was trampled in the dust, and the cries of the oppressed reached into heaven. Polygamy had been early introduced, contrary unto the divine arrangement at the beginning. Yahweh gave unto Adam one wife, showing his order in that respect. But after the fall, men chose to follow their own sinful desires, and as a result, crime and wretchedness rapidly increased. Neither the marriage relation nor the rights of property were respected. Whoever coveted the wives or the possessions of his neighbor took them by force, and men exulted in their deeds of violence. They delighted in destroying the life of animals, and the use of flesh for food rendered them still more cruel and bloodthirsty, until they can regard human life with astonishing indifference. The world was in its infancy, yet iniquity had become so deep and widespread that Yahweh could no longer bear with it. And he said, I will destroy a man whom I have created from the face of the earth. He declared that his spirit should not always strive with the guilty race. If they did not cease to interlude with their sins, the world and its rich treasures, he would blot them from his creation and would destroy the thing with which he had delighted to bless him. He would sweep away the beasts of the field and the vegetation which furnished such an abundant supply of food, and would transform the fair earth into one vast scene of the desolation and ruin. Amid the prevailing corruption of Methuselah, Noah and many others labored to keep alive the knowledge of the true Yahweh, and to stay the tide of moral evil. 120 years before the flood, the Yahweh, by a holy angel, declared unto Noah his purpose and directed him to build an ark. While building the ark, he was to preach that Yahweh would bring a flood of the water upon the earth to destroy the wicked. Those who would believe the message and would prepare for that event by the repentance and reformation should find pardon and be saved. Enoch had repeated unto his children what Yahweh had shown him in regard unto the flood. And Methuselah and his sons, who lived to hear the preaching of Noah, assisted in the building of the ark. This brings in what says this, our contest at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this message, and more. We're going to close now with a song. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid out somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Oh, yeah, you know, I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then yeah, what will I do? The angels beckon home me from heaven's open door. And I can't feel at home in this world anymore. They're all expecting me, and that's one thing I know. My Savior pardoned me, and now I'm on earth go. I know He'll take me to, though I am weak and cold. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Oh, yeah, you know, I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, what on earth would I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. I have a loving mother waiting for glory land. I don't expect to stop until I shake her hand. She's waiting up for me in heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world. not my home, then now what will I do? The angels beckon on me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Just up in the glory land, we'll live eternally. The saints on every hand are shouting victory. His song has seen his praise drift back from heaven's door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Oh, now you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then oh God, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's door.